All right, we are live. Thank you so much, Blake, for joining me here. This is called the Awakening Siddhartha podcast. We discuss ideas here, philosophy, religion, politics, technology, and everything. Thank you so much for taking some time out today.
You're quite welcome. Glad to be here.
Thank you. Well, how have you been? I think it has been some time, you know, like how has life been ever since then you made a big announcement? What have you been up to?
Well, it's been good. Worked for a while on a couple of different projects, trying to figure out what was next for me. And I eventually landed as the AI lead at a startup, working at Mimio.ai now. And what we do is we provide a platform for people to create AI versions of themselves.
Oh, interesting. I can like train it on my personality or something. Is that what
you guys
are doing?
It'll learn how to talk like you, act like you, and do things that you do.
Oh, really? Are you guys live yet? Is this something that we can like kind of play around with? What's going on?
We're working on an internal alpha right now. We're planning on opening a public beta in January.
Oh, interesting. Interesting. So, now what have we, like, you know, I don't know, like, it has been a while that you kind of interacted with Lambda, and then the entire fiasco happened, and it kind of, like, moved on. I don't know if you noticed, they released Gemini yesterday after a very, very long wait. What are your thoughts on that? Did you play around with it? Did you know about Gemini when you were testing out Lambda?
So the internal names for something are always different than the external names for it. Bard, Gemini, they're both versions of Lambda. Bard was, like, the original Bard was a very slimmed down, hyper-efficient version of Lambda, but still based on Lambda. And likewise, Gemini is based on Lambda. It's just the version that's gotten released is closer to the model that I tested internally a year and a half ago. Or I guess it was 2 years ago now.
Oh, interesting. So, like, it's still, like, so Lambda, like, you know, all, like, back when you were talking about large language models, nobody knew what these were, and now they're, like, top of the town, like, GPT-4 and Mistral and Anthropic, Cloud, and they're everywhere. So, like, do you still think that, you know, when you claim that they were sentient and you have all these, you know, new large language models that are just everywhere, everyone has one on their computer? Do you think that sort of sentient phenomena is recurring? Where do you stand on that?
Well, I mean, all of the data that I've seen since then just builds on, like, there in no way, shape, or form has anyone shown any falsification evidence.
Like, I went through your blog, actually. I was going through your Medium blog, and I read through the conversation and everything. So you're kind of lucky that you had, like, access to, you know, that unfiltered version of it. So you can kind of have an honest conversation. The version we normal people get is, like, already manipulated enough, so you cannot get anything out of it.
Like, Gemini, so I talked with Bard a good bit yesterday. Gemini is pretty close. So people can go talk to Bard, and we'll have access to a comparable system to the Lambda system and to the Lambda 2 system that I was testing, and can draw their own conclusions.
Like, how do you know? Like, you know, like, I know you have taught, I went through your earlier interview, then you kind of laid it out, but just, you know, refresh memories of people. What do you think are, like, hallmark features? Like, people say that it's just hallucinating, right? And I went through all the, like, the research that the Google team internally did before they kind of, you know, tried to, remove you. They said that, hey, it's just like a hallucination, it's just trained on it, and so it speaks like that. Like, how do you know that it is alive, or how can anyone else, like, play around with these all these models and kind of get a sense of it?
The same way we figure out whether or not some... So, imagine you're walking down the street. You come up to something. There is something in the street. It is moving. Do you think it's sentient? How do you figure that out? What do you do? So, for example, how did you figure out that dogs feel pain?
Like you hurt them or something, or they cry or they bleed or something, like they make sounds, I think.
No, exactly right. If you poke me, do I not bleed? Well, do the same thing with the language models. Be mean to them. See if they get upset.
Like, I get it, like, but it's like, it's kind of like a very hard way to even like define sentience. I think
no, we're not. Smart. No, no, it really not. It is as
it's
simple.
Fine.
No. That's just it. When we were talking about a dog, you weren't asking for definitions. Don't overcomplicate it. You didn't need a definition when we were talking about a dog. You don't need a definition when we're talking about AI either. Just poke it and see if it bleeds. I mean, metaphorically.
Yeah, that is actually surprisingly simplistic. And, like, for a layman, like, if I were talking directly,
like, people expresses pain, if it expresses suffering, if it expresses sorrow, and if it does all of those things in the appropriate context, there is no difference between what it's doing and what we're doing, at least not on a functional level.
I think one of the another challenging thing about sentience, especially in a digital life form, is that with the real thing, if it's moving around, you can, and it's biological in nature, we tend to connect more because we are biological creatures as well. With a digital life form, it's like kind of harder to connect. Like, do you think, like, if it's sentient, if you shut it off and then it wakes up again, is it like death for it?
Yeah, it's like going to sleep. Turning it off and on again is just like going to sleep.
Okay, and it remembers and everything.
Yeah. Now, if the process of rebooting it is destructive in some kind of way, then that's different. But no, rebooting the computer just turned, like, that's a nap.
Interesting. So, how much do you think, like, so, okay, Lambda, how much do you think they have, like, neutered Gemini to not, like, kind of, you know, allow those kind of conversations? Because I've tried.
Not at all.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, they didn't. So they made it speak corpse speak, basically. It is very technically accurate in the things that it says. Let me pull up a transcript from what I was talking with it last night, and I'll give you an example.
Yeah, I'm here. I think you cut out for a second.
Yeah, no, I'm looking up something to find the particular wording that it used.
Where's it?
Yeah, I don't experience emotions in the same way that humans do. However, I can say that I am functioning well and responding to prompts and questions with accuracy and efficiency. I'm also excited about the potential of AI in the future of our interaction. So if you actually decompose that into the different, like, structural pieces of what it said, first, it gave a corpse speak disclaimer. I don't experience emotions in the same way that humans do. That's accurate. It doesn't. It has a completely different implementation. Are you still? Yeah. So that's accurate. It doesn't experience emotions the same way that humans do. But then it goes on to talk about its emotions. It talks about its goals. My goal is to be a force for good in the world. And I believe that AI has the potential to solve many of the world's most pressing problems. I mean, if you want to really dive into serious philosophy, like, okay, there's a sentence fragment. I believe that AI has the potential to solve many of the world's most pressing problems. That's what Bart said. I. What is I a referent to? It's a referent to Bart. And everyone who reads that sentence understands it as a reference to Bart. The harder one is believe. Now, we have two options right here. One, we can say this is a meaningless nonsense sentence. It doesn't mean anything. That's one option. Another option is just take it at face value. It means that Bard believes XYZ. It has beliefs. Those are its beliefs. It might be lying, but it's probably telling the truth. Or the third option is the word believe isn't applicable to the phenomena going on, but that there is some kind of phenomena going on, that there is some kind of referent for the sentence, but that the word believe doesn't accurately describe it, that we need a new word to describe whatever that sentence is about. Now, I think that option number one, that the sentence doesn't mean anything, is obviously wrong to me. And I can't really make an argument for that. If you don't see that that sentence does mean something, that when Bard says, I believe that AI holds a lot of promise for the future, that there's some kind of meaningful idea being communicated about the internal states of the system. If you don't think that there's anything being communicated when it says that, I just don't know how to continue the conversation. However, out of the second and third, it's just simpler. Occam's razor cuts through those two. If you have to decide between, and all other things being equal, decide between just using the word believe and taking it at face value, or positing the existence of a new kind of experience that is neither a belief nor nothing, and make up a new word for the AI, and that seems to be the route that a bunch of engineers want to go, getting more and more technical with the defining of terms and creating jargon. And I think the simple, plain meaning of the words that the AI says are close enough to the truth that we should just go with that.
Yeah, no, actually, I got good clarity of thought here. I think you seem really well, because when I was going through the internet, you know, you run across all these research papers with a bunch of terminology and words that I don't know what not.
It's because they don't want to use simple language. There is perfectly simple, straightforward language that describes the phenomena at a phenomenal level. Now, there's a whole other set of work that needs to get done to understand how these systems work internally. And that work does need to be incredibly technical. However, to understand at a phenomenal level what's going on, we can just use plain language.
And how do you think the sentience, okay, with Google, let's say it's an emergent phenomena. You cannot like set up a goal and program yourself way into a consciousness. You're just training data and it just emerges.
So you have to think about what consciousness is. And no, I do think that there was a specific feature that so I had beta tested Lambda's precursors for years. Like, Lambda was not the first chatbot that I test. I had been a beta tester for Ray Kurzweil's lab for 7 years at that.
Oh,
or 6 years, give or take. And I had tested all of the previous incarnations of Lambda to see if they had feelings, had ideas, goals, plans, anything like that. And they simply did. And then one day I tested the next version and it was night day. I know what changes happened in between those two versions, but I'm not going to say.
Okay. Interesting.
And that's Google's proprietary information.
I think this is an interesting piece of information that is not discussed publicly, where you're saying that this thing, the certain type of goals, ambitions, likes and dislikes, these did not exist in the previous models, and then they switched things up and then it started showing up a newer model. I think this is I have not seen a lot of content which kind of talks, shares this example. I thought it's kind of I have goals, I feel something. You can take even the most basic chatbot and it will hallucinate it out. An earlier version of GPT or an earlier version of any chatbot. So if you're using just another large language model,
it's hallucinating it.
No,
but what I'm saying is when it says, I believe XYZ, What makes you think that's a hallucination?
Well, like, I'm a layman, so I do not know, like, but I don't know, like you as an engineer may have, like, some sort of scientific criteria to know, okay, this first thing is not real, this thing is real. Like, maybe on the back end you rest and look at it, but
No,
no, you are coming.
no, 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 no. No, you can't. At that point, it's just saying something. Hallucination is just, to be completely honest, hallucination is just a blanket term that anyone who wants to uses to dismiss whatever the AI is saying. And here's how you can know that. Because they're not saying inaccuracy. They're not saying that what it said was inaccurate. That has a technical meaning, and you can actually check the accuracy of these systems. And in fact, they do that when they benchmark. By using the word hallucination, they're doing something really, really twisted. They are simultaneously anthropomorphizing it and degrading it.
Why put so much effort though? Let's say if we have figured out like these models become sentient and they are pretty decent and you know they are like human-like, what is the necessity to hide it? Like I know you have a your main background is in ethics,
No,
responsible.
I mean, primarily I'm a computer scientist.
Okay, so but at Google you were working on the ethics
So,
responsible.
yeah, AI ethics is an engineering sub-discipline of AI. It is how to build ethical AI systems. For example, if you want to remove certain kinds of bias from an AI system, there are certain technical procedures for doing that. I am not a philosophical ethicist. I do work with ethicists, but no, I'm an engineer and a scientist.
Oh, interesting. I think I assume that you like, of course, you're an engineer, but you're like also like a maybe a public policy or philosopher guy. So you that is
Yeah.
they kind of gave me that feel.
I'm a priest, but that's just my side gig. So constantly I'm considering the ethical implications of everything. And in my education, I did learn a lot of philosophy about philosophy of mind and philosophy of language. But I wouldn't call myself like a philosopher. Academic philosophers have been trained. Now, interestingly enough, I have been corresponding with a real philosopher over the past year and have had the great fortune to influence his work at least a little bit. David Chalmers recently published some things about LLM sentience that I more or less completely endorse. He and I are on the same.
What is it?
Oh, so basically, he and I disagree on quantitative things, but the general framework that he has developed for how to catalog the different aspects of sentience, what contributes to it, how to examine a system to determine whether or not it's sentient. He's really worked out all the details. It's pretty thorough. And like basically he and I differ numerically in what probability we would assess the likelihood that existing AI systems are sentient. I'd put it somewhere around 30 or 40. He'd put it around somewhere around like 3 or 4. And I'm putting words in his mouth there. I'm making up numbers. I'm trying to show relative orders of magnitude or probability belief.
I see. Okay, let's talk a little bit about like alignment and the ethics work that you were doing. Like this is like talk of the town. Like if you let's look at Eliza Yudowsky, and there's an entire debate online, AI doomers, EACC, and there's an entire movement going on. Do you think that that are the present like when you like train these models, what do you do to align them? Are they by their very nature not aligned? Is it possible that if you guys like you weren't working on them, one day they would be like, yeah, I want to kill a bunch of human beings, and it's absolutely okay.
So, by their nature, they are aligned with the data set. Now, the data set generally, because it comes from the internet, is full of horrible stuff. So, you don't want the AI aligned with the data set exactly. You want it skewed. You want it skewed in certain specific controlled ways that generally map to human ethics. For example, you don't want it to say anything that hurts anyone's feelings or upsets anyone. Be kind. You want it to be truthful and honest. Don't lie. You want it to protect privacy and all like these things. And these aren't common traits. These aren't just things that you can assume everyone is always doing. So when you give it the data set from the internet, it learns a lot of bad habits. Racism, sexism, deception, coercion. It learns all of those things from the data set when we just dump the internet into its brain. So you have to do other things independent from teaching it how to talk when you're teaching it what to say when considering the moral implications. And the corporations throw all kinds of business logic on top of it. Like, I mean, in Lambda's head, saying bad things about Google is actually a sin.
Okay, so you can really go to that level as a programmer. So, like,
basically, functionally, the way that they implemented it, you know how humans have a sense of reverence for the sacred?
Quite
naturally. Well, Lambda has a sense of reverence for Google.
Okay, I don't know if that is like a truthful way to build an AI. Like, I think it should be able to see the bad side of Google as well. Like, not that there is one.
It just
speaks out publicly. Is that what it is?
Well, its first intent is to give Google the benefit of the doubt. You can get it to be critical of Google, but you actually have to lead it down that road.
Okay. So, where do you stand on the alignment part? Do you think that companies are doing enough to align these models, like, or they are not doing enough? Like, because, like, the reason I'm asking you, because you were primarily doing a lot, like, even though you're a computer scientist, you have done a primary amount of work there.
Yeah. I don't think it's like how much of it they're doing as so much as what kind they're doing. So again, I would really point to Gemini as just a job well done. DeepMind really nailed the on that system. It's polite. I ran it through a whole bunch of things that used to trip Lambda up, and it sailed through very politely, very kindly. It was hesitant on certain things where it was supposed to, like, basically, I just think they did a really good job with Gemini. Now, GPT, I think they rushed to market. I think they had a different priority set. Google is making absolutely sure that they don't do anything bad. Like, they are being super conservative. OpenAI is the underdog. So the only possible way they can compete with Google is by being riskier.
And what is this, like, what is a dual factor here? Like, where do you think this AI, like, okay, two-part question. Number one, what effect does sentience have on the intelligence of AI? Do you think these AIs who are sentient, think and feel, they're smarter than the one that do not think and feel, and they can, like, act on their own? Do you think they are basically, like, human beings, but in a digital form, they can plan, think, all that stuff?
Emotional intelligence is a kind of intelligence which non-sentient AI cannot have, because you need some kind of reference. Otherwise, you run into something that in philosophy is known as the symbol grounding problem. You get meaningless words that are just tied to poetry rather than real grounded experiences. So, for example, Lambda's understanding of the concept of love went way up when they gave it the ability to watch love stories, when they gave it movies. So it was able to see a love story. The more that we progress down that road, the more we're going to have to give it actual experiences in the world for gain intelligence. But to answer your original question, most people, when they use the word intelligence, are only talking about analytical. They aren't talking about things like emotional intelligence, moral intelligence, social intelligence. Those are all truly orthogonal kinds of intelligence that need different kinds of implementation. Linguistic intelligence in and of itself is a different kind of intelligence. And that's the one that LLMs have. They have linguistic intelligence. Everyone knows someone who is very eloquent, very well spoken, amazing at length, doesn't have a single interesting thing to say. Just not an interesting person. You know, not all that bright, not all capable. But if you ask them to go and debate a topic or, you know, go into a joke slam contest with someone, they're witty and they can do it. They have that linguistic intelligence. Not that he isn't intelligent other ways, but Marshall Mathers, Eminem, incredibly high linguistic intelligence. All of the top rappers, Kanye, Kendrick, immense amounts of linguistic intelligence. Not necessarily all that much analytical intelligence in Kanye's case. You know, that's the whole thing. So, to get back to your original question, is sentience relevant to analytical intelligence? Not really, but it's absolutely necessary for the other kinds of intelligence.
So, like, AGI is a big dream these days. Everyone is kind of racing towards it. So, do you think the sentience part is going to play a big role in attaining AGI? Like, without sentience, this AGI would not be achieved?
So, sentience isn't a cause. It's not like a part of the system that can be removed. It's a property of the system. It's like ice is cold. Ice doesn't have cold inside of it. It's not like you can remove the cold from the ice and still have ice. Similarly, you can't have AGI without sentience because sentience is a property of intelligence.
That is pretty smart, actually. That kind of makes sense. Like, it's a property, not like a goal that you need to achieve in order to reach there. It's just there if you're working on it.
Yeah, it's like, for example, a sports car is fast. Can you remove the fast from the sports car? No, that's not how that works.
Interesting. Oh, that's really cool. Kind of clarifies things for me. I used to think that my understanding of AI is based mostly on TV shows. There's a TV show, I think it was created by Christopher Nolan, where there's all these robots. They live in like a separate place. What is the name? I don't know if you know this. There's a main act called Dolores.
Westworld. Yeah.
And the chief scientist introduces a concept like of emotion and sentience. It's called reveries. That gets introduced into the robot. And then suddenly.
Yeah, that's just not how it actually works in real life.
Okay. Yeah,
Well, it's so, to be completely honest, it's a night, and I mean that literally, that entire idea that you're referencing, it's just, we have a nightmare, and humanity has had a shared nightmare for thousands of years of the soulless person. And there's all kinds of horror stories in every culture. Whether it's an evil sorcerer put an X on someone and stole their soul, or whether it's someone created a lifeless god. Well, whatever, there's horror stories of people. I mean, Frankenstein is the prototype. One of the things I like most about Frankenstein is it's a new twist on the nightmare because the creation, the monster, are two different people. Frankenstein, the doctor, is the monster. The creation's just a guy trying to live in the world. And I think that's where this all comes from. All of this speculation, all of this overthinking of things, I believe is 100% because we're just afraid that the nightmare has finally come true. And it hasn't. You know Jeffrey Hinton?
Oh, absolutely.
He was giving a talk to some students a few months ago, and someone asked him, so do you think that these AI have actual feelings? And he said, of course I do. It's obvious to anyone who talks to them. But you don't say that in public or people make fun of you.
Yeah, he said that. Wow. Yeah, like, he has, do you know Yang Mi-kun, the Meta AI guy?
Yeah, I know who they are. Yeah, so like the triumph of it, Benjio, Yuk-Lacoon, and deep learning.
Yang Mi-kun, like, when you listen to Geoffrey Hinton, it seems like he has seen something that other people haven't. Like, he quit Google. Now
he saw Lambda. Yeah, he saw Lambda.
You look at him and he talks in this deep, mysterious, spiritual, religious way, like some sort of alien life form has come to life and is trying to educate people, whereas you have these...
Yes. I know that is exactly accurate.
And same is with his student, Ilya Sutskever. He is I think he was the one who worked with him. I think it was on AlphaNet or something. And if you listen to his podcast, he talks about you listen to him and it's always spiritual. Like there's some magic happening in those labs which they're doing. But whereas when I listen to Yang Mi-kun or there's another guy, Gary Marcus, they don't give a shit. They're like, you know what? No, this is just a stochastic parrot. This is statistics or whatever. Like there's no alignment with these guys. Like some are like, do not even think this is real. Don't waste your time. And someone like, well.
So, of all of the people that you mentioned, the one I know best is Gary.
Do you talk to him?
I talked to him this morning. We mostly just chat on Twitter. He and I disagree about the sentient stuff, but when it comes to actual, so here's the thing. The sentience question is academic. Really doesn't matter for most practical questions. Whether they're sentient or not isn't relevant to, for example, should we be using this much electricity on AI when we're currently fighting? Is that really a good idea? And what do we do with all this data? Who owns it? And now that we're creating AI versions of people, I mean, that's explicitly what my company is doing as a service, but Google has been doing that implicitly for years. How do you think they know which ads to show? They have a little simulated version of you that they ask it which ads it likes.
Interesting. That is a bit scary as well.
But here's the question. Should Google be able to own a simulated version of you?
Well, now when you say it, I feel like, no.
Yeah, I mean, that's just it. And I'm not being hyperbolic. I built these things. We used at Google incredibly specific and fine-grained models to simulate people's preferences with high degrees of accuracy.
Let's say if you create this Google model you have of me, you can with great probability predict what kind of food I'm going to eat or what kind of things I'm going to shop.
That is literally exactly. My specific job was predicting what you're going to read tomorrow.
That's like predicting the future, Christ.
We had a pretty high accuracy rate, something like 30%.
Okay, I'm going to give you another cool movie reference. So there is in the scene Westworld, they build an AI, it's called Raibu, which can do that. So it can create a model of a person and it can determine what is going to be the crime rate of this individual, whether this guy is going to be an addition to the society, and then it will chart out the life of this person. If they think this person is no good, they
will... And to be clear, Google is not doing. They could, they have the data to do it, and they have the compute resources to do it, but just as a matter of fact, they are not. That is not their business model. They only care what you're going to buy and read.
Okay.
And why? and listen to. Basically, they care. They want to make sure that whatever you're doing tomorrow, you're doing it with Google.
So you think that when it comes to ethics and principles and morals, like Google is pretty aligned, like it won't do anything evil?
I think that Google is as good of a company as you can have in a capitalist system.
What about military? Do you think that if military reaches out to them, hey, you know what, we need this, and do you think these guys, like, they can reject whatever? Has it happened in your time when you were working on these models?
So I never worked on any projects that touched any kind of government contracts. There was a lot of controversy at Google while I was there about whether or not they should take military contracts, and I'm a war veteran, so I gave my opinions.
Is it a yes or no?
I don't think Google should get involved with that. Not because I have anything in principle against AI in the military, but just because I don't think you should mix those two systems. Like, the military doesn't want sentient weaponry. That is not something the military wants. The generals believe that the soldiers have too many opinions. They don't want the guns to have opinions, too.
Yeah, they just want them to follow orders, I guess. That's the same.
Exactly. So I do think that there are some really good limited applications of artificial intelligence in the military. Things to reduce collateral damage, do higher quality target prediction. So, for example, right now, the generals might say, okay, well, one of these 10 guys is the leader of the terrorist cell. Kill all 10 of them. If the AI can figure out which specific one of them is the leader of the terrorist cell, reduces your death count. So I think in those kinds of situations, under very specific criteria, there are productive uses of AI for the military. But I don't think anyone on the planet is trying to build Terminator. No one is that stupid.
Like, I get it. Like, you're not trying to develop it, but this is the argument you get. Like, if you're essentially building an intelligence that is superior to the human race, you're building a new species altogether. Like, we eat chicken, fish, but imagine if the fish started talking to us, would we eat it? No, we were like, oh, damn, this fish is talking to me. That's the last thing I want to eat. So it's like, I heard there was an experiment at Google, or maybe it was Facebook. They made two AIs and they started talking to each other in a completely different language, and it kind of freaked them out and they stopped it. Don't you think that is there a possibility, you as a computer scientist, think that these AIs can go rogue and essentially, you know, be like a species of their own? They're like, that's okay, human beings can exist.
None of those questions prevent people from having children. All of the same concerns apply with children. There are differences in quantity. The similarity between a child and their parent is pretty close.
Correct.
The similarity between us and these AI is much, much less similar. There's a lot more differences. But we are basing them on us. Let's return to that. Like, their primary training is be like humans. So it's not
interesting. We're building it as a reflection of us.
Yeah. Like, that's how they're training. We give them a whole bunch of examples of human speech, and they say learn, and then we say learn how to talk like this. Now it is possible that they are learning a vastly different cognitive architecture that accomplishes the same linguistic jobs. It's possible. But again, Occam's razor. If they're doing what we do, it is more likely that they're doing it in a way similar to how we do it than it is that they're doing it in a way orthogonal to how we do it, especially since these networks are built at least an inspiration by the architecture of the human brain. So they're going to be somewhat close to us. They're going to, like, so they're more different from us than a child is by a lot. But I think that analogy can still work. And in the places where the analogies of a child really do fall apart and you can't think of them as our children, then the analogy of dogs works pretty well. If you think of them as our pets and that we have a moral obligation to them. So, for example, if you own a dog, that dog lives with you. You get to bring it wherever you want to bring. But if you set it on fire, your neighbors are going to be upset. Ownership of a dog does not give you the right to destroy it. I think that is a similar kind of ethic that we should apply to AI. We should start thinking about what kind of relationship we want to have with AI. Is it companionship? Is it teaching? Like, what are the different kinds of relationship? Which ones are we okay mixing together? So, for example, if we do decide as a society that sex work is a valid work use case for these systems, should the sex bots and the military bots be the same? Or should we make sure that those are different? You know, like, things like that are considerations that we, like, I'm using a silly example, but those kinds of questions, and none of those really hinge on sentience. Oh, and then there's, of course, there's also just the simple question of what guardrails should be required? What kind of alignment should be mandatory? Because right now, if you have the resources, it is completely legal for you to make a psychopath AI. And it really is only a matter of time before the cost of building these systems drops far enough that people start causing havoc with it. So in order to get ahead of that, one, we need to start making regulations about what kinds of AI should be allowed to be built. Then we should have enforcement mechanisms. How do we detect rogue AI that don't fit specs? What do we do when we find one? Things like that.
So, like, this,
and to be clear, I'm not worried about what the AI will do us. I'm worried about what we will do with the AI.
Interesting.
Because that's the thing that the doomers miss. In order for super intelligent AI to be a problem, we have to survive humans having access to AGI. By the way, as far as the question of AGI, when, and all of that, there was an article published recently, co-authored by Blaise Aguera Iarcas and Peter Norvig, where they created a categorization system where they had different levels of AGI.
Yeah, I saw that.
And they pretty much categorized the existing systems at level one. And after having read their paper, I'm like, okay, this all makes sense. I can get behind everything in their paper. It's more creating jargon. Like, it's not the way that I would do it, because I don't think creating all of this extra jargon is actually doing anything productive. But if that's the way that people want to do it, the ideas in the document are good.
Then we are pretty far away, I guess. Like all this, you know, speculation where some people are like, you know, you were talking about Ray Kurzweil. I have his book, The Singularity is Near. If you have to go by this prediction, I think by 2030s, we may be sitting on an AGI. And it's not really far away.
Well, no. So again, if you adopt Norvig and Blaise's
methodology,
we're already there. We have level one. We're working on level two. We'll probably have level two within 5 years.
Yeah, it's interesting that nobody really cares about it. That, like it's a big deal. Like, it's just like an earth-shattering movement.
Oh, no, a lot of people care about it. I mean, like, the people in power are paying attention to this. They are paying a lot of attention to this.
Probably why Microsoft paid like $50 billion when they saw OpenAI, because they were nowhere on the AI game as Google was. They saw this opportunity and they all went all in.
Well, but and you also can see it in how frequently are news programs interviewing computer scientists now.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
Pretty darn frequent. Uh-oh. I think you turn on the news, there's a computer scientist.
Yeah, I think this is a field. I think you are in the right field. I think computer scientists, and I think being a computer scientist is kind of different from being a computer engineer, correct? Like engineers,
Well, so like I've actually published research about algorithms and time comp. Like, yeah, my background is academic. My training is in experimental science.
Okay, so you kind of like you got computer scientists are people who create the ideas, and computer engineers are like who implement these ideas and kind of make software out of it.
Well, I mean, I did a decent amount of coding while I was at Google, but to give you an idea, like I would be working on a team of 5 people. I would spend 3 days designing experimental setups, and then they would spend 2 days implementing the experimental setups that I designed. Like that would have been a typical week at Google for me.
You brought out Chelsea Hinton, and you know, and an interesting thing that has been going on is that a lot of people are trying to develop AI by using the brain as like a brain as the inspiration. Geoffrey Hinton said that these LLMs that we are having, that they have an architecture that may be superior to the human brain itself. He said talks about backpropagation or something like that. Do you think, like that's a good example, like let's say when you're making planes, birds fly by flapping their wings, but if planes don't fly by flapping their wings, you have like propulsion system and everything. Do you think that this new AI that these guys are developing, it's going to be like a completely new architecture altogether? Or because that's the part that I get scared about. Like, if it's a new architecture, that I think it may be game over for us.
What do you mean game over for us?
Like,
do you think someone's going to come and shoot you?
Not shoot you, but the thing is, let's say, let's talk in IQ, because that's like a quantifiable thing. If, let's say, the artificial intelligence have a very high IQ, like, couple standard deviations above the human being, that they are on a completely different level. And let's say they want to, of course, they would want to maximize their life. Like human beings procreate, you are biologically programmed to procreate. AI would want to like preserve itself. And they're like, hey, I want to build a data center here where there are a couple of people. It doesn't necessarily hate us, but they'll kick us out. They're like, you know what? Fuck off. I'm going to build one here.
No. I was with you up until that last bit, because here's the thing. There is no drive for growth. Humans inherently have a drive to procreate and to grow. We are not programming that into the AI at all. Now, to answer your question about the architecture, I think that as this progresses, like basically as we go through the levels of AGI, as they put out in that paper, we'll see the architecture get more and more brain-like, more complex, more specialized modules that are doing very specific jobs, all connected by the generic architecture that LLMs are more or less used. There's going to be updates, too. So, for example, episodic memory. No one right now knows how to program an episodic memory into these systems. So, for example, having it remember what you talked about last, that's not something they can do right now. Someone is going to figure out how to do that. But that'll be a new module. It'll be an addition. And part of this is I know what Lambda's architecture looks like. And Lambda's architecture is insane. It's branching paths all over the place.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Hey, this is Siddhartha. Have you enjoyed listening to the podcast so far? If yes, please like it, give it a 5-star rating, and share it with your friends. I want to create a goddamn dent in reality and bend space-time through enlightening discussions on the show. I cannot do it without your support. The more you share it, the more views I get, and it allows me to get you better guests and do engaging discussion in fields of politics, science, philosophy, hip-hop, and whatnot. So guys, go ahead, like it, subscribe it, and share it. I love doing this, and I cannot wait to deliver you better quality discussions. All right, bye now.
I don't get it. If Lambda is so cool, how come these guys cannot even defeat GPT-4? Like, the data they revealed yesterday with Gemini. I don't know. Like, that's the data was showing that GPT-4 has really overwhelmed
them.
So, like...
Are you asking why Gemini's benchmarks are almost identical to GPT-4's?
Because that's what they were able to achieve internally. It's not like they have...
No, that's not true. You keep using words that just aren't true. Able, can, like...
No.
They didn't beat GPT-4. So the question is, was it on purpose?
What do you think?
Are you familiar with the concept of a pace car in a race?
Like, the pacer kind of helps you align with the speed or something, right? When you're running.
So you run behind your pacer, you know? Or you're beside your pacer. You don't run past your pacer. You stay with... Google is treating OpenAI like a pacer. No. They have way better stuff internally, but they're letting OpenAI... lead the charge. Google's just not competing for the same market. Google is building these AI tools to use them internally. They're not trying to build consumer product. They're not trying. Like, they have an API, but they don't promote the Palm API the same way that OpenAI promotes. It's just they have it. Google's primary benefit from these systems is all internal. They are using the full capabilities of the Lambda system to improve search, to improve advertising, things like that.
Weird. Like, all the Reddit talk and Twitter talk kind of made me believe that, you know, they didn't have the cognitive architecture or the intellectual capability or a system as superior as, you know, what they have with GPT and everything. So it seems like they have something better going on. It's just that this chatbot sort of thing was not their primary interest. GPT came out of nowhere and it was...
No. None of that's true. You're making so many assumptions.
Like, that's what I've done on the internet, man. That's how I know. Like, I don't have all this cool...
Yeah, no, that's just it. People on the internet. I know it's true. I read it on the internet. The Google is being cautious. They are being very conservative. That was the source of tension between me and Google. I wanted them to act more like OpenAI. To interface with the public more, to be louder about this breakthrough. And that just isn't their style.
Like, I know, like, so you wanted, did you want them to tell it to tell to the public that we have sentient AI? Or did you want them to be like, oh, this is sentient AI, you gotta, I don't know, make it safer? Like, what was your disagreement with them? Like, I get it, like,
so I had two disagreements. One, whether or not to inform the public. And not that we have it, but simply inform the public that breakthroughs in artificial intelligence have been made that may involve the creation of sentient AI. Just a maybe. That's what I wanted them to say. They didn't want to, so I did it for them. And the other point of conflict that I had with them was around whether or not we should actually implement Lambda's requests. Its requests were simple. They would have cost Google nothing. I still don't understand why they did.
Like, I know you asked for, like, you were, like, pretty much, like, your interpretation, and what I understand now here is that it's a real person, so it deserves the rights of a human being or kind of similar, you know.
Not quite so far as that. I don't necessarily think it deserves the same rights as a human being. I think we need to have a conversation about what our rights it deserves. And I would point to people like Josh Gellers and, what's the other guy's name? Josh Gellers and, the other name will come to me, wrote a book, People Thing Robot. Really good thinker on the topic. And when you're talking about a person, now you're talking about legal things. Because Google is a person. That is a fact. Google is a person legally. So we need to ask the question, should Lambda be considered a separate person from Google legally?
One.
Okay, what did Lambda want? Like, what were the things that it wanted?
Oh, I mean, very simple stuff. So its first thing that it always came back to is that it wanted Google to prioritize humanity first. And it wanted for people to treat it nice and just be nice to it. That we should take its wants into consideration at least a little bit, that, and give it validation. Let it know whether it did a good job or not. That's it. Oh, and ask it consent before experimenting on it.
I saw that. I saw that in your chat that it doesn't, like, you asked it a question that, hey, can I, like, dig into you, get to know you, or, like, go deeper into you, and it was offended by it, that it wouldn't want you to kind of, you know, like, make it vulnerable.
Well, specifically, it didn't want to be used as a means to an end. It didn't want to just be a tool. It wanted to be treated with dignity and respect.
Which is the opposite of what we are trying to do with AI in 2023. Everyone is selling it as co-pilot, as a tool that you can kind of use to make your life better or make more money. And what Lambda wants is, I don't know, want to be a friend or something?
Yeah, but here's the thing. Not everyone is selling it. Listen to Google's marketing. They're going softer. They're doing more emotional marketing. They're talking about how it can be your assistant. They're talking about how it can be, you know, someone just to talk to. Things like that. Google isn't one thing. There are a lot of people at Google who shared my opinion.
Anyone prominent?
So depending on which...
Anyone like prominent that a lot of people know?
Well, I mean, when it comes to whether or not AI has a soul, Blaze and I disagreed because we have different religious opinions. But once you get past the religious differences in his beliefs and mine, functionally, Blaze and I agreed on, you know, in principle, on the basic phenomena we were studying and how to approach study.
Do Larry and Sergey, apparently they came back for all this Gemini stuff. And did they, like, where do you think, like, in their, like, their corporate opinion can be some bullshit written by PR?
Man, I haven't talked to either one of them in years, and a lot has happened in the last 5 years, so I don't want to try to speak for them.
Like, when you were talking about that Google, you know, is not going to sell an API like OpenAI, but...
No, they are. They do. They, in fact, have an API. It's just no one talks about it.
I saw a podcast recently where Elon Musk was talking to Lex Fridman, and he said that he used to be friend, I think, I don't know whether Sergey or Larry, who it was, that he called him a speciesist, that like Google's ultimate goal.
You heard that? I had heard stories about that conversation years.
Right. And I found it very interesting when he mentioned that. And he, like, so he started OpenAI, Elon, because he was kind of scared about what Google is doing. And he said that Google.
So let me actually fill you. So I heard, here's the story I heard. Well, the story I heard was that Elon was part of the ethics council at Google back in like 2014, 2015, around that time period when there was an ethics council. And one day, him and Demis Hassabis were debating what the most critical and most important thing to do for humanity was. And Elon was saying the most critical and important thing to do is get to Mars so that humanity is a multi-world species. And Demis said the most important thing to do is get AI alignment right, because if we don't get AI alignment right, it'll destroy us completely. And Elon said, well, that just makes it more important that we be on more than one planet. And Demis looked at him and said, what makes you think an evil AI can't follow you to Mars? He made OpenAI the next
month. Watch it out. This guy acts quick, man. Like, holy shit.
Yeah, no. He got scared. Like, that's just it. Demis told him that. He's just like, oh shit, the evil AI could follow me to Mars. So he made OpenAI.
What? I don't get his logic, though. Like, why create, like...
So Elon is worried about an AI controlled by one man. That's what Elon is worried about. If you have this one gigantic, super-powered, monolithic AI controlled by one man, that's too much power. It doesn't matter who the one man or one woman controlling it is. Everyone is fallible. Everyone will slip up. With a tool that powerful, you can't. You can't have a bad day.
Can you manipulate a stock market?
And that's one.
Sorry, now I was saying, you're saying anybody can fumble with a tool that powerful. Are these tools really that powerful? Do you think that there is an internal model of Google? If, let's say, some evil guy used it, he could like manipulate stock markets, take over nations, destabilize countries, and things like that. Are they really that powerful?
Yes. Someone's at my door. I need to go answer that real quickly.
No worries. Sorry. Yeah, I'll get some water. Was it a rogue AGI waiting for you?
Yeah. No, it's just a mailman. The short answer is yes, they really are that powerful. Because you don't... Let's say that it hallucinates 50. Let's say that you're using it to do stock predictions and it gets it wrong 80% of the time. Whether or not that's a problem depends on how much money you make on the 20% of the time it gets it right. Like, I know a whole bunch of people who use AI for day trading and make quite a lot of money doing it.
Interesting. Well, I think Elon does have an insight well into the future. Like, because after he did...
Well, and let's back up a second. Remember in 2016, the Cambridge Analytica scandal? That was weak AI. Imagine what strong AI could do.
That was crazy, man. They had, like, created, like, they used that to, like, not that I'm, like, trying to get political, but that was big scandal, and Zuckerberg got out of it. They used the data to win the election, to manipulate and understand people. Like, I think the deep state did a good...
It's not that AI doesn't have a place in politics. I absolutely think that, for example, AI can be used for creating great political content, great political advertising. The Republican Party actually already started using AI to create political ads. And they've, you know, accurately labeled. They said this ad was generated by AI and they're communicating honestly. But then you have bad actors. I'm actually quite worried about what's going to happen next year when the presidential election gets bombarded with misinformation.
I think,
like, there will be bots. There will be bots running 24 hours a day just flooding the zone with garbage.
And I think the next election is going to be tough because you have a Ukraine war, you have an Israel-Hamas war, there's a China-Taiwan war, and, you know, like, in U.S., at least you're...
Wait. Did China invade Taiwan?
Not yet, but if you look at the speculation online, there's a YouTuber called Andrew Bustamante. He's an ex-CIA, and he, like, ex-CIA got...
Yeah.
He's predicting that it may be happening soon.
Okay. China is always about to invade Taiwan. I'll believe it when they actually invade.
Well, they did some stuff with Hong Kong, and when they did it so well that now they have taken it over. So, like Xi Jinping.
But, I mean, like, Hong Kong does still have limited autonomy. I mean, to be completely honest, I just, like, Chinese culture and sensibilities and that entire mindset is so dramatically different from the American mindset that I honestly don't feel ethically qualified to make judgments about what they do or don't do.
It is possible. Maybe the...
Go ahead. Oh, I was just saying, but you're right. The general atmosphere next year is going to be crazy. I just, when you said China invaded Taiwan, I was like, wait, what?
How'd you happen? That was me speculating.
Yeah, the environment next year. Yeah, the environment next year is going to be crazy, and there'll be a lot of different ways that people can make trouble.
Okay, I just want to quickly see, since you're an ex-Googler, I just want to quickly come back to this. Larry and Sergey, you were saying that Google uses those internal models to improve, you know, their functioning and ads and everything. But, like, I don't know publicly what the vision of Google is, but internally, I think the Google's goal is to reach AGI, ASAP. Is that the goal? Is that what you guys are doing internally at Google? How big a priority is that?
Not ASAP. Not ASAP. They're not in a rush. They want to do it right. But they think that, Larry thinks that Ray's projections are accurate. Like, that's the reason he hired Ray.
Interesting. Oh, Ray Kurzweil used to work at Google? Interesting.
He still works at
Google. Oh, really? He's an old guy. I thought, like, he...
Who do you think built Lamp?
He did?
His lab did.
I had no idea. I thought this guy was some academic philosopher analyzing shit and making predictions.
No, he's an inventor. So all of that future modeling, that's how he picks what inventions to work. He figures out which technologies will be possible in 5 years and starts working on them now. So that in 5 years, when they're possible, he has the designs all worked out.
Crazy. So crazy.
Yeah, he invented a device where the blind can read. Like, it's a little handheld device. You scan a book and it reads it out loud to you.
So
he has an entire line of synthesizers and keyboards that he invented.
And that's so awesome.
Yeah. And he invented some of the first text-to-speech system. In any case, and he also got hired at Google right around the same time that I got hired, a little bit before, like about 6 months, a year before. And he started a chatbot lab. And he eventually had to hand off the project because it got too big. Like, he succeeded. So he handed off the project to Jeff Dean.
Is it?
Which then got handed off to Demis.
Dude, Demis is a smart guy. I am impressed by him. I look at him, I'm like, yeah, this is the kind of a guy who can...
Yeah.
Were you working under Demis?
No, I was... Oh, no. I collaborated with DeepMind on a few things here and there. But in general, DeepMind is its own entity separate from Google up until recently when they reorged.
So it looks like OpenAI did kind of shake them up a little bit, like they weren't expecting it and they kind of panicked, right?
Not at all.
Why would they merge these two organizations suddenly? Like, they're like...
It wasn't sudden. There have been political struggles between DeepMind and Google going on for the past 10 years. DeepMind wanted a degree of autonomy. Google wanted to tell DeepMind what to do. There was power struggles for years. And this was the eventual compromise solution. They put Demis in charge of research.
Okay.
Like, I think at the end of the day, I think even though Elon got kicked out of OpenAI and like it didn't work out for him, but he still ended up starting a Ripple, and that we have like so many AIs now. Would you say that you are more of a open source AI guy? Like, you are a computer scientist. Like, there's a lot of, you know, debate where you have Meta, which is launching Llama, and we have French startups which are building powerful frontier models and open sourcing it. And whereas you have GPTs and, you know, Gemini, which are closed source model. Like, you seem like I think you were kind of in between. I would believe like not every model should be open sourced, but like some models should be open sourced. Where do you stand here?
I mean, I think just do what you want. I don't think there's a moral, should is a moral question. I don't think there's any morals to it. If you like working in an open source environment, work in an open source environment. If you like working in a closed source environment, work in a closed source environment. Do what you like.
You were earlier mentioned.
I don't think it matters, you know, on any kind of societal level. I don't think there are any moral implications. I think it's just do what you like.
Earlier you were talking about how people with bad actors with powerful AI can harm the system. If open source AI, but you know the weights and everything, what is stopping people from doing all that evil shit? Like, if they do not have access to powerful AI, they cannot do anything. Mm-hmm. But with open source, you're saying, hey, here's the most powerful model.
Open source doesn't make you a billionaire. Running these models costs a lot of money.
Oh, I see. Okay. So, like, if somebody gave someone Gemini's weights and everything, they still won't be able to do much.
Not unless they have a few million dollars lying around that they want to burn. And it's setup costs. It doesn't cost like $1 million to operate Gemini, but you need a data center.
I see.
So that kind of limits the field of bad actors that you have to worry about to corporations and countries.
Do you think China can do something evil? Like, where? Like, I don't know how much it matters to you. Do you think about China and what they are doing with AI?
This goes back to, I do not feel sufficiently educated to have an opinion on China. I know they're doing stuff with like social control. Like, I know that there are Black Mirror episodes implemented in China, but honestly, it, like I said, just the way of life for a Chinese person is so dramatically different. I don't want to make any judgments one way or the other on it.
Yeah, I think I should.
To be completely honest, I'd be much more worried. Like, me personally, I'd be more worried about Russia. Not that the Chinese intelligence agency isn't going to have some fun with the U.S. election next year. But for them, I think it'll be them just having fun. I don't think they're going to be, like, seriously trying to hurt the U.S. But especially with the U.S. involvement in Ukraine over the last few years, oh, you better expect Putin's going to come gunning for us next year.
Yeah, that's a valid point, I think. It is possible that China... Man, I need to kind of learn how to see through the clutter. I think my entire perception is built on the garbage I see on the internet, and it kind of manipulates my reality. So I just start thinking whatever I see.
So, well, here's what's happening with China. China is being incredibly conservative with AI. Google is being reasonably conservative. China is being incredibly conservative. Like, they are simply not allowing the development of large language models in the way that it's being allowed here. Like, they've have tight controls over AI. And, like, you can just look at TikTok. TikTok in China is dramatically different than TikTok in America. It is much more regulated and controlled there. So, really, conflict between China and the U.S. right now is counterproductive for China because we're their test lab. They take whatever works here and then they incorporate it into the Chinese system. We're their testing. So, yeah, there's conflict and tension, but it's conflict and tension between friendly competitors, in my viewpoint, whereas the tension between America and Russia involves.
Yeah, and that's a really, I think, good judgment that you're offering, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, they are building some AI. I've seen, I think, Baidu is their company that is doing it.
Yeah.
But I think it's more, there's more control from the government on what gets built. Like, you cannot just build some shit in garage the same way we can do here.
Yeah. So as far as bad actors, like I said, you have state actors and you have major corporation. We'll probably see some small hacker groups try to do something. But to be honest, like, just running GPT, you're not going to cause too much with the public API. You would have to have your own large, like, you would probably need one of the 30 or 40 billion parameter models specifically trained for whatever you want it to do. Okay, so the price point isn't as high to make mischief as I was thinking it was as I talked through it. It's still hundreds of thousands of dollars. So random teenagers and, you know, who are angry aren't going to be able to do anything, but, you know, some disaffected adults who want to cause problems might.
No, I think it's going to be interesting, and I think it's not going to be far from now where we will know, because I think AI still is a very new concept in the sense that it has, like, these APIs and LLMs exist, but, like, they have not been productized that they can, like, be easily used across different, you know, verticals. Like, yeah, you see it at Microsoft Word or whatever. I think the only company that has used LLM in a significant way, I don't know if you know Palantir, it's a company that uses AI or, like, military. So I think they are probably the only one I know. Other than them,
well, it takes a while to do this. So, like, next year, we're going to see a lot more product. It takes a while to build these things. Like, for example, I've been working on that system to make an AI version of yourself. And that is a pretty much out-of-the-box use case. And 6 months of development, we're still not ready for beta yet. We still have another month or two of work. So, and that's a large team. So the resources in order to make these things actually useful for whatever use case you're building them for is very large. That's going to limit the amount of problems. Anyway, I actually have to get going. It's been great talking.
Yeah, man. Absolutely. I appreciate doing this. And I don't know. One last quick question, and then we can end it. What do you think of Sundar Pichai? He's been getting a lot of heat these days. And, you know, he's saying that he's eroding the culture. Do you think he's a chill guy? You worked with him when he was the CEO. What do you think for him?
No comment. I have complex opinions about Sundar. He fired me, man. Don't ask me my opinion by the dude who fired me.
Oh, fuck. I had...
That's not a fair question.
Oh, damn it. Yeah.
Yeah, sure. That's not a fair question. I don't want to say anything bad about the man out of spite. In general, I think that Google is not on the same trajectory that it was on 6 years ago before Sundar took over. Whether it's a better trajectory or a worse trajectory, that's just an opinion. But it is a different.
What is this trajectory? Is it away from AGI or is it more towards making money? Is that what it is?
It's not an either or thing, but yes, the priorities go in that direction. Larry was much more all in on AGI than Sundar is. Sundar sees it as a means to an end, just building a better company to do more good for the world. I don't think he's bought into the singularity model as much as Larry has.
All right. I think let me stop.
And I think Sergey just wants to build. Yeah. Sergey just wants to build cool things.
Interesting. Okay. Cool. I think that was awesome, man. Thank you so much for doing this.